We're doing the In Yaakov. We're up to page Daf Samach Gimel. The letter is Kuf Mem Beis. It says on top right 210. We had learned, Rebbe taught that a person has to be careful not to bring in too many buddies into the house. That'll destroy his home. We had learned another quote from Rebbe: don't appoint a butler in your house, because if someone else is going to be in charge of your house, then that doesn't bode well for the family structure. As we find that Potiphar's wife, so long as there was a Hebrew slave in the house, she was okay. The second Yosef was appointed in charge of Potiphar's house, so then there were problems between Yosef and the woman. So Chazal say, don't appoint a person in your house. It's not healthy. It's not good to have men frequent your house. It's not good to have a guy in charge of your house. Tanya Rebbe Omer, and we're continuing with quotes about Rebbe and the idea of modesty. Lama nismecha parashat nazir leparashat sotah. In the Torah, we have two stories juxtaposed. You have first the story of a nazir, if a person wants to take a vow to abstain from wine. And then you have the story of the sota, if a man suspects that his wife behaved improperly because he sees her going off with a specific guy and being in private with him, and he asks her not to do that, and she does it again. So there's a whole procession of how the Torah says, God says, I have to get into the picture to restore faith between the two, or verify if she was improper. And that's the whole story of sota. So why are the two juxtaposed? One is a man taking a vow or a woman taking a vow, they won't drink wine. And the other is the story of sota. Says Rabbi, lomar lecha, to teach you, shekol haroe sota bekilkula. Anyone that witnesses the sota as she is embarrassed, because even if the sota comes out clean, it's pretty embarrassing, the whole procession. And the procession is really testifying that she wasn't 100% right. Because you're talking about a woman whose husband asked her, please don't be alone with that man. And she went ahead and she was alone with him again. So even if What comes out of the sota procession is that nothing completely wrong happened, but something wrong happened, you know. Or if her husband asked her, don't be alone with him, and she was alone with him. So something wrong happened there, and so the procession is really an embarrassment to the woman. So anyone who sees that should realize something. How did it come to that? It came to that because people were too focused on the material world. Now, the whole idea of the connection between a man and a woman is something that can be the most extreme physical action or the most extreme spiritual action. It could be one of the two. Now, when a person sees someone who went so far after the physical world to the point where they were unfaithful to their spouse, so then yazir atzmo min hayayin, and he should come to a realization, I got to go to the opposite extreme, I got to be careful, and he should take a vow and distance himself from wine. So that's why the Torah juxtaposes the two. When you see the downfall, you should take a lesson and pull yourself back in the other direction. We have a quote in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. Who is Rabbi Yochanan? Rabbi Yochanan was a disciple of Rabbi. He had 10 children who all died in his lifetime. The 10th child fell into a vat of boiling water in front of his eyes and melted in front of his eyes. Rabbi Yochanan compiled the Jerusalem Talmud. Rabbi Yochanan was exceptionally beautiful, and he had a brother-in-law named Reish Lakish. Rabbi Yochanan is a descendant of Yosef. Thank you. Rabbi Yochanan, what else do we know about Rabbi Yochanan? The halacha is like him when he argues on Rav or Shmuel. He's a tremendous power in halacha. So Rabbi Yochanan tells us, Lama nismecha parashat sota leparashat terumot. Just before the story of sota, you have the commandment of nazir. Directly after the story of sota, you have the commandment of trumot and masrot, giving your tithe, giving your truma to the kohen and levi. Why is it there? Why the juxtaposition? So again, the idea behind this is the Torah is not written necessarily in chronological order. So then there has to be some order here. Yes, there is an idea of why certain concepts are juxtaposed. So why are these two juxtaposed? To teach you, if someone has the taxes he's supposed to give the kohen and he withholds them, so then God says, you didn't go to the kohen to do what I asked you, to give your donation, I'll bring you to the kohen for another reason. You'll have to end up coming with your wife. It says, if a man holds on to his holy parts of his fruit. So then, directly near that, it says, a man whose wife seems to be unfaithful, he should go to the kohen. He should bring his wife to the kohen. And not only that, but ultimately, he needs them because his assets wear down until he comes in need of the gifts he should have given away. So this is the famous Medrash. You guys probably know. There was once a man who was lying on his deathbed. He called in his son and said to him, look, all the years my fields made a lot of money. You keep running the fields the way I did. Just be very careful to give your tithe to the levy, give your tithe to charity. Make sure to be careful with that. So the first year, the field produced the same 100 tons of bushels, and he's making a mint. The second year produces the same amount. The third year he starts thinking to himself and he's saying, you know, I know the field is producing a lot, but to give a tithe, that's a lot of money to give the poor and give the Levite. Now he starts skimping on his tithe. Then the next year the field starts producing less. So he gives even less to the poor and to the Levite. And so it goes until finally the field produces 1/10 of what it produced when he first got it. So he calls in his friends and he says, give me some advice, look at what's happened here. So his friends say, well, did you change anything from how your father was running the business? So he says, well, actually, yeah, my father warned me to always be careful to give the tithe, and I skimped on that. So they said, okay, so now you see what happened. God says, so long as you give your tithe, I leave you the master of the field, and the coin is my representative. If you hold on to your tithe, so I say, okay, you're holding on to it, so you're the kohen. So I'll give you the tithe and I'll take the rest. So that's what happened. You ended up with a tithe. You ended up with a tenth of what the field was producing earlier. So that's the story the Medrash brings. So that's the same idea that over here Rebbe says, that if a person holds on to what he's supposed to give, the kohen and the Levite, the ishet kodoshav, lo yiyu. You want to hold on to it? God says, fine. But then you're keeping it. Then you become the kohen. So then that's all I'm going to leave the person. And that's what Rebbe says, that we learn from that verse that that's a skula for a person becoming impoverished. Amar nachan bar Yitzchak, v'im notnan, and if he does give his tithe, sof mitasher, so that's an amulet for becoming wealthy. Shneemar, ish ha-shayten la-kohen, lo yiye. You give the coin, you will have, the verse says. What does it mean, you will have? Lo yiye amon orbe. That's an amulet that you'll have a lot of money. Okay. You guys realize that whenever the Talmud tells us these ideas, they're part of a broader picture. It's like the doctor says, don't smoke because it's bad for your lungs. Don't drink too much wine because it's bad for your liver. Then a guy drinks wine and he's perfectly fine. So the doctor says, yeah, that's because he eats a lot of olive oil, and there are a million other reasons why he's okay. So there are many factors in the health of a person. You know that drinking a lot of wine can hurt the liver. Drinking a lot of coffee can hurt the liver. But then there are other factors. There's genetics. There's what age he started. So the same is true in the spiritual world. When the Talmud says, you do this, you'll get wealthy. So yeah, it's one factor that'll push in that direction. But there are many other factors too. Rav Huna bar Brechi said in the name of Rabbi Ezra HaKapal, Kol HaMeshatef Shem Shamayim B'Tzaro, Kofelino Parnasato. So he uses a very interesting term. He says, whoever, how would you say Shituf in English? Shituf is join, right, but how do you call the Christian belief in the Trinity? What's it called in English? Believing that there are three powers together. No. No. Three powers together. No, because the Talmud is purposely using the same word we use about Christianity. Meaning when we speak about Christianity, we call that shituf. Shituf literally means partnership. And the idea is we say that there's one force up above. And you don't join any, there's no joinment or anything else. Rabbi Lezer HaKapar uses that term. He says, whoever joins God's name in his pain. So he's purposely using it as though you're fusing God as a partnership with you in your pain. It's an interesting use of the word. Even though ordinarily we say, no such thing as joining anything with God's name. Yeah, but if you're joining God with you, if you're saying God's a part of my life, he's here with me in my sorrow, koflin lo panasato, so they'll double his assets. So this seems like an obvious concept, but it's all but obvious.
I don't understand.
The idea is as follows. Ordinarily, let's take the following scenario. A guy gets called in by his boss. He's been working for the company for 25 years. And his boss says, you know, you've been doing a great job, but times are rough. We're sorry, we won't be able to continue with you next month. So he walks out of there devastated. And he walks in a haze and a daze. And he comes home and he tells his wife, I don't know what we're going to do at my age. How am I going to find a job? And he's totally baffled. What does he do? He starts looking over his savings. He starts calling contacts. He starts putting his names on different lists to find a job. Where does God enter the picture? Way down the road, maybe. His first thought is, hey, what do I do? What's going to happen? The nature of a person is that when trouble strikes, so there's the flight or fight, right? He's thinking, what am I going to do practically? Chazal told us something which should be obvious. You're suffering? Talk to him. People want a shidduch. So they do everything under the sun. Do they talk to their Ribbono Shel Olam? So sometimes, even though it seems so obvious, sometimes he's not a part of our sorrow. We daven, but somehow our most basic wants and needs, we forget to include him in that. So the Gemara says, if you join him in your sorrow, meaning you make him a part of your life to that extent, that you turn to him when something's really bothering you, so then kofrino panasato, a person will find that he doubles his assets, as the verse says,
yeah. I don't know, I hear that and I agree. I understand that it's right, but the thing that I'm not so sure about is if, you know, you have to pray and talk to God, if that has to be the first stage. For example, when Yaakov was coming back into Eretz Israel, back in Eretz Canaan, and he knew that Esav was approaching, the first thing he did was he divided his camp and he did the war preparations before he prayed, because because Esav was approaching. Like, you know, you got, like, God expects us to pray, but he also expects us to take action. And therefore, when you're pressed for time, but when there's an emergency approaching, you have to take care of the emergency. And obviously, you need to include God in your sorrow and in your requests and in your hope and everything. But I don't know if it necessarily has to come. Like, talking to God necessarily has to come before you take the necessary precautions and preparations.
Okay. Rabbi Shmuel ben Nachmani amar, panasato meofefet lo kitzipur shnamar v'chesef toafot lach. He'll find that his livelihood flies towards him like a bird, and that's another derivation on the verse. So Rav Tuvia bar, in the name of Rav Hoshaya, gives us another understanding of the verse. And this is a very scary understanding in the verse. The word to'afot, he goes on a different verse. Whoever takes it easy when it comes to learning Torah. There's a person who learns with diligence, there's a person who invests his time diligently, there's a person who takes it easy and, you know, okay, I'll catch 5 minutes of the shiur here, I'll be focused tomorrow, all kinds of excuses. So then in bokoch lamod biyom tzara. So then when a time of danger comes, he doesn't have strength to stand up to it. Shnemal, as the verse says, itrabita biyom tzara tzar kochecha. If you were lazy in your preparation, so then when the time comes, the person finds he doesn't have the strength to stand up to it. And Amar Ravami Bar Matna Amar Shmuel, afilu mitzvah achat shenemar itrapita mikol makom. Ravami Bar Matna said in the name of Shmuel, it's not only Torah, it's any mitzvah a person took lightly. And we could add to that what the Gemara says. It says, pachadu v'tzion, the people in Zion were scared, chataim, because they were missing. They were lacking. They had sins. So when a person's faced with a challenging time, very often what comes to haunt him is he knows where he did not live up to his own responsibilities, and then he feels like, what am I turning to God for? I know I didn't do my end of the deal. So what am I turning to Him for? So of course that's a little bit of an error, because Hashem is always interested in our turning to Him, and sometimes, like the Medrash says on our parsha, that's why Hashem sometimes gives us challenges. For that reason specifically, so that we will turn to Him. But at the same time, we feel less less forceful when we turn to him, because we know our own weaknesses. We know we didn't live up to our end of the deal. So we should still turn, like we saw in the earlier Gemara. It's our responsibility to make him a part of our troubles, but it's harder. It's harder. It's a person wants to be able to turn to God and say, look, I did mine. Amar Rav Safra, Rabbi Avu Havi Mishtai. We will begin a story today, which is a very interesting story with a lot of halachic relevance. And we won't get to finish it today. We'll finish it next week. So we have the following story. Sheyarad Chananya ben Achi Rabbi Yoshua Lagola. This is a story directly following the destruction, not directly following, but a century and a half after the destruction of the Second Temple. So Chananya, the son of Rabbi Yoshua's brother, went down into exile. So he was the chief rabbi when he left. And in Chutz La'aretz, he continued his role as chief rabbi, and he decided, he set up the calendar in Chutz La'aretz. So we're going to see later in the Talmud that Rabbi Akiva actually did that. When Rabbi Akiva was chief rabbi, even when he was in exile, he would establish the calendar. Ordinarily, the calendar has to be established by the high court in Jerusalem. Now, after the destruction, the chief rabbi was Rabbi Akiva. No one came close to him. So when he went into exile, he continued his role as chief rabbi, defining when the calendar, when you make it a leap year, when you make it a month of 30 days, 129 days. Now, Chananya, the brother, the nephew of Rabbi Yoshua, he was the chief rabbi. He went into exile, and he did like Rabbi Akiva had done. He continued his role as chief rabbi. He's running the calendar. Shagru acharav shnei talmidei chachamim. So they sent after him two sages, Rabbi Yossi ben Kifar and Bno Shel Zecharia ben Kvutal, the grandson of Zecharia ben Kvutal, who was a rabbi in the days of the temple. He appears in the Mishnah Yuma. And Rabbi Yossi ben Kifar, his father was also a rabbi in the days of the temple. He served in the temple. Two Kohanim, a Kohen and a Levite. Kevan Shera'otam, now he himself was a Levite, this Rabbi Chananya. When he saw them, Amalem lama batem, he said, what did you guys come to Chutz La'aretz for? Jews not supposed to leave Eretz Yisrael for Chutz La'aretz. What did you guys leave to Chutz La'aretz for? Amru lo, so they justified themselves. They said, ilmot Torah banu, we came to learn Torah. You're allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael to learn Torah. So he said, oh, you came to learn by me? Fine. Hechriz aleihem. So when they came into the academy, he told everyone in shul, he said, these people, anashim alalu gdolei adorim, they are the leaders of the generation. What fine scholars they are. Vavotehem shimshu bebet hamikdash. Their fathers served in the temples. Everyone came around. Can I touch you? Your father was in the temple. Wow. We have the Mishnah, that's the Mishnah in Yuma, where Zecharia ben Kvutal tells us about how he would work with the Kohen Gadol on the night of Yom Kippur. Now they started making trouble. He'd give a ruling that something was defiled, they gave a ruling it was pure. Hu osel vehem matirim. He would forbid, they would say it's permissible. Now he's got a problem. They're making up trouble on purpose. Hechiz aleihem, so he put out a sign and let it be known, and we'll pick up here, Bezrat Shem, next week.